The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with the Navigator, Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling, and Andrew, I'm beaming.
Beaming?
Yeah, I'm beaming.
Why are you beaming,
Kyle? Because of what our trip just took place. The trip that just took place. I'm beaming from that. And I hope you are too, because you were beaming at least during that trip. You had a lot of windy roads to navigate in certain spots, maybe 250 miles worth, but we're back alive, and we had a great trip that included 7 Division I college wrestling programs.
2,600 miles?
Was that 2,600?
7 days?
Man.
About 2,578, something like that. Close to 26. We're going to round up.
So when we talk about that, so we're saying 7 D1 programs. 5 of those were in North Carolina. And I don't know how many people know that North Carolina has 7 Division I programs. They're second numerically only behind Pennsylvania. And we went to 5 of the 7. I'm proud of that. I'm proud that we got to hit Campbell, North Carolina State, Appalachian State, and Duke. We hit 5.
And so, 5. In addition to Ohio State and Indiana.
Correct. So we hit 2 Big Tens and then the 5 out of 7. And every single one had a highlight moment. Everyone was gracious. And it just really helped us understand the landscape of North Carolina wrestling. In particular, of course, part of that was attached to the World Team Trials taking place in Raleigh. And for those who don't know, and I didn't really understand it, I'd heard this before that, hey, the Duke and North Carolina, it's just up the road, but they are.
Yeah.
Duke is right there. NC State's right there. And North Carolina is all right there within, what, 20 minutes of each other, probably? 30 minutes? I don't know the exact time.
Yeah, probably about a half hour, depending on traffic.
So you put it this way, if you compare it to Iowa, they have 3 programs. Imagine Iowa State, you and I, Iowa, all being within 30 minutes of each other, all right there in that corridor. And you'd have
Campbell's right down the road, too.
Campbell, yeah. How far away is Campbell?
It's like, what would it take us? Like 25 minutes from Campbell's campus to North Carolina State?
Throw 4 programs in there. So we have 3 in Iowa, Division I. So you throw a 4th one in there, and they're just as close as the other ones. It's pretty cool to think about when you break it down and you think that there's 7 programs in North Carolina. It's not known as a wrestling hotbed. There's only been 2 high school wrestlers to come out of North Carolina and win NCAA championships, Tap Thacker and Mike Machiavello, both for NC State. But it seems like that's an area that's growing, and you just see some of the trends happening that I think more and more that North Carolina schools are going to be on people's radars.
Absolutely. 3 schools in the top 25 this year in North Carolina State, and Duke. Only other 2 states that had 3 in the top 25, Iowa and Pennsylvania. So that's a feather in North Carolina's cap. And then you look around the state, and we had, as you mentioned, we had a chance to see the facilities, really impressive facilities at Campbell and Appalachian State. Really impressive facilities.
3 full mats, locker rooms looked really nice, just had a lot going on that you wouldn't expect. Like, we go in and we don't know what those rooms are going to look like. We don't know what the environment's going to be, but across the board, I think you'd agree that all of the campuses are just beautiful. Regardless of the wrestling room or what the facilities might look like, they're all beautiful campuses, and you go on and you're wowed, and you can see why wrestlers would want to go to these programs, that these North Carolina schools are appealing. And then you go through the coaches, and 4 of those 5 that we went to had ties to Oklahoma State. And I think there's a reason that there's a pipeline there. John Smith's creating his own pipeline. And we talk about the Gable pipeline. I think John Smith has a nice track record here. Some guys in programs in North Carolina. It's really cool to see how this is flourishing. And there's a reason that North Carolina State or Raleigh had the World Team Trials. And I hope there's a reason that we can get the NCAA championships there in some level, maybe not necessarily in Raleigh, but maybe in Charlotte. I think it needs to go there. It's just a logical move for the sport.
Hope so. Hope that the fan bases at all those schools can continue to grow and it makes sense to take it there for the NCAAs. I mean, we saw it in 1994 in Chapel Hill. Hasn't been back since. But as I mentioned, there's just a lot of positives going on there. I didn't even talk, you know, we haven't even brought up Davidson yet.
Yeah.
But Davidson, Andy Lozier has brought in Joey Dance a year ago to his staff, Chad Walsh to his staff this year. I think that those are two well-known multi-time All-Americans, dynamic personality, and Chad Walsh, guy that is a lot of fun to talk to. We need to get him on the show at some point, Kyle. Just so many things that are positives going on down right there. I mean, I had a chance to write about it for my column this week, and Pat Papalizio was talking about just attendance. I asked him, what was attendance like the first year you were there? He said, you know, we get about 100 for a duel, 100, 150 for a duel. They had 4,000 for Ohio State a year ago. And they've just got so much going on right there. I mean, they've recruited really, really well. Class a couple years ago that was ranked among the top in the country. I think this year's class is pretty strong. They've got some top guys committed already for next year. North Carolina has recruited well. They had three guys in the Junior World Team Trials Finals, incoming recruit Gabe Tagg on that team. North Carolina State, Trent Hidley is on the Junior World Team. So just a lot of really good things going on down there right now. And I think that if you're looking around the country at looking at it like the stock market, I think wrestling in North Carolina is a buy candidate.
It's a buy candidate, and they have good coaches in place to say that. You feel confident about who's there. And you have big name coaches. Pat Papalizio has made himself a big name. They had a trophy a couple of years ago. You have Coleman Scott, who is doing good things, an Olympic bronze medalist, NCAA wrestling champion. Kerry Colott probably brings the best credentials, two-time world medalist, two-time NCAA champion, maybe the greatest high school wrestler ever. But then you got a couple guys like Glenn Lanham and John Mark Bentley, who maybe people don't know as much about, but once you get to know them, you come away saying, I'm buying in on these guys, because they are very impressive people. They understand the dynamics of building a good program, and you leave saying, all right, these are guys, again, that you could see why athletes would want to go to these programs. And I think from my vantage point of the five North Carolina schools, Appalachian State impressed me the most, just from the vantage point that I came in, not even having any idea what the wrestling room would look like. Three full mats, beautiful locker room, just had a nice facility, had a good logic behind not wanting to go to the bigger arena, but let's just fill up the arena that they have. It's just a nice gymnasium. Came away impressed with John Mark Bentley. And of course, we've had Glenn Lanham on the show, and we were impressed at that point. And he did everything to continue that string of why we like him so much and why we think that he's a good buy at this point.
Makes you feel good about the future of the sport, doesn't it? When you get out and you get a chance to talk to so many high level people at so many different places.
It does, especially in that area where you just, how many people know about that? How many people know about North Carolina? I would say not a lot of people, but you got to win to get on people's radars. And I think North Carolina State, really, with them getting an NCAA wrestling champion and Mike Machiavello, you've had some other guys, Nick Gwizdowski in there, Darian Caldwell of late. So they have some guys that have really put NC State on the map. And then you just sprinkle that in with some of the other programs. But right now it's NC State. They're the premier program in the state.
North Carolina's on the way too.
For sure.
I mean, they're on the rise, and look at Austin O'Connor is going to be probably the preseason number one at 149 pounds, top returning place winner. He's got 3 years eligibility left. They've got a stable of lightweights there that are really impressive, with Gabe Tagg joining Jamie Hernandez. They wrestled heads up for the 61-kilo spot on the Junior World Team And then they've got some bigger guys that have performed well too. But I think there's a lot there that's positive. Down the road at Campbell, first All-American here in school history a couple of years ago, and in the facility project there that we've touched upon a little bit. Just you pull up in the parking lot there and you've got painted on the windows. You got the image on the windows that screams wrestling. And we heard it in the parking lot. There were a couple students, like three students, I think, going on a tour, right? And one of them said to the other two, this is wrestling. Wrestling's one of the strongest programs on our campus. Wrestling's big here. That was cool to hear, like before we even stepped in the building.
Yeah.
So
positive reinforcement on what's going on there. And Campbell's facility of the seven that we visited was probably the most interesting to me, that it was just standalone. You had the wrestling mat there, and the office from the edge of the mat to Kerry Kolat's office was probably, 5 to 7 feet from door to mat, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have laid down and probably touched it.
Yeah.
And it was just all self-contained, and then locker rooms right there, and then you have a tunnel that goes out into the arena. What a really great setup for fans and the wrestlers to be able to just have all of that access all in one place. So I think you want to house all of the wrestling in one place, and I think it really fits. And then as we go to an even higher level, Ohio State is absolutely jaw-dropping. We had a chance to spend some time with Tom Ryan, the head wrestling coach there. We probably got, an hour and a half there, maybe 90 minutes, somewhere in that range at the new facility. And 5 full mats. And you forget about all of the stuff they have. Tom Ryan just kept going through all of the stuff they had. And it's just, as he's saying it, I just kept thinking, I hope I can remember all of the cool stuff. But 5 full mats. He made sure that he showed us the sound system, so he had us play a song.
Yeah, you put Def Leppard on there?
He didn't know who Def Leppard was. He kind of knew Pour Some Sugar on Me, but I'm not sure if it resonated. But he put that on there, and he was blaring it. And that is one impressive facility. That's the future right there. And
natural lighting.
They're talking about holograms in the new arena that they're going to have right there. So you'll have a hologram of, say, Kyle Snyder in one section, Logan Stieber in another, and then it could go on and on around that arena. Good size for what they need. It's not too big for a wrestling event. So he said if it's an Iowa or a Penn State or a Michigan, they might move to the bigger arena. But the facility is well worth your time. If you are in Columbus, Ohio, go check it out, because it is state of the art. It's probably the new standard at this point.
The one thing that's really cool about a lot of these places, Ohio State and Campbell come to mind right away, is just everything's right there. And the whole team can spend time together. It's great for unity, I think. And I think that was kind of the idea behind it all, right? Was to just have everything that they need in one spot.
And it's a great concept.
It's like a dining hall. They've got
awesome.
A lounge. They've got locker rooms. They've got the training facility there. Strength and conditioning.
Duke's a little bit different, where you have the offices a ways away. It's probably, I don't know, a quarter mile walk from the offices to the facility. It's lengthy, but that's what they have. And that's what I like about Glenn Lanham, is that he will not make an excuse. You will not hear an excuse out of Glenn Lanham.
No.
He will get it done. He will find a way. And he kept driving that point home, is that we're not here to make excuses. We're here to find results. And you come away talking to Glenn Lanham, and it really is inspiring. And boy, he has a vision, a picture. He has some unique thinking that I know you're going to explore, and that we're going to bring up in future podcasts and in future articles. So stay tuned to that, because there's some really cutting edge stuff that they're doing that we're going to talk about. But Glenn Lanham, he just has a vision for it. And if you think you're going to sit on Glenn Lanham and Duke, you're making a big mistake, because they're coming.
70,000 to go to school there annually. No athletic scholarships. One of just a handful of programs on that campus that don't have athletic scholarships. And doesn't sound like they're going to get them anytime soon. Had them at one point.
Yeah. You remember that story?
Yeah they had them at one point, and that came to the coach, asked if he had everything he needed to win a conference title, and he said no. And so the athletic director said, do you mind if we take your scholarships? Didn't bother him. So wrestling hasn't had him since.
Yeah. Boy.
They could sure use him now.
Yeah. That'd be great to have that back.
But top 25 2 years in a row. Two highest finishes in school history. People are seeing that you can get a really good education there, and you can win there. I think what's going on there is really cool. If they could find another family with a couple sets of twins that are high-level wrestlers, like the four fine silvers, that would go a long way too. But they're doing pretty well with what they have. Doing really well with what they have.
And then you just can't say enough good about these coaches that opened the doors for us. We were on the way out traveling, and we saw Chapel Hill was an exit. We just said, should we stop at Chapel Hill and check out the program? Coleman Scott was with his family, said, give me 30 minutes, and opened the doors. So we got to see North Carolina's program. Got us a little bit late to going to John Mark Bentley at Appalachian State, but we got a chance to see him late at night. Would we arrive? Maybe 8:30?
I think it was 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock there, and gave us a full tour of the facilities. And then the following day, we end it with Indiana. And I think the one thing I came away with was they have a better history than you might think. They have a deep, deep wrestling history. Yeah. Won a championship in the 30s. You saw some of the images on the wall that do a good job of documenting that. They've had some good guys come through the program. Angel Escobedo being one of those.
Joe
Dubuque winning two championships.
Four-year stretch. They had won three NCAA titles in 4 years at 125 pounds.
Yeah. And then some of the names that have made a difference, and just names you recognize, have come through Indiana. So it was fun to look at those walls, look at the history. They do a great job of preserving that history in the program. So that was fun to be able to cap it off and have, like we said, two Big Ten schools and then the four North Carolina schools. So just to wrap that part up, we got to see seven programs. Was there a theme that you had across the board that stuck out to you and said, hey, this is something across the board that all the coaches had similar?
Just I think we have a lot of high-level people in the sport right now. At least we ran into them. There was nobody that we're like shaking our head that kind of, what do they do this for or that for? You know, the one thing that was really cool is just to see philosophies too. Hear philosophies, see philosophies. Took some pictures of things up on the wall. App State puts a thought for the day up in their locker room. And the one that we saw on the whiteboard up there, you have a lot of time to train for next March unless you think you have a lot of time. Thought that was pretty interesting. I thought there was one at Duke on the walls at Duke. If you are in here, this is tacked up several places throughout their wrestling room. If you are in here, you are doing something to get better. Drilling, live, technique, games, rolling, stretching, etc. are all acceptable. Sitting and talking is not. And then it wraps up with the quote, losers assemble in small groups and complain about all the things they cannot control. Winners assemble as a team and find ways to win. Indiana had, the 10,000 rep challenge on their whiteboard that Angel Escobedo has challenged everybody on their team to, a neutral position technique, a top technique, and a bottom technique, and drill it 10,000 times.
Yeah, that's right.
And so they've all written it down, the technique that they're working on and how many reps they've done. So I think that there's some cool philosophies in place and some cool things that a lot of the programs are doing to raise their mentality.
And I think with the seven we visited, all were very warm and welcoming to us visiting.
Awesome.
I think that was one of the great parts. And then got a chance to see someone that we've connected with a lot. We have a segment called Casper's Corner. We were in Casper's Corner.
Yeah. Casper was in Casper's Corner.
Literally, we had Casper's Corner that day. And we have a few videos from that we're going to roll out on social media and maybe on the website Track Wrestling. So that was fun to talk to him. And that guy has drive. Boy, when he starts talking about it, his voice elevates and
he gets fired up. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool to be around that, the excitement that Jacob Casper has. So another guy that you want to go all in on because he's going to do great things. So as we wrap up that, thinking about what we have here coming up, we have Kerry McCoy, who we saw out at the World Team Trials Challenge Tournament, no longer with the University of Maryland, but we're going to talk about his career and what is going to happen next for Kerry McCoy. One of the all-time great heavyweights. Did a great job. Two Olympic teams, world silver medal. Only lost one match at heavyweight his last three seasons. So we get a chance to talk to him. One of the greats of Penn State and Kerry McCoy. We both like him.
One of the good guys in the sport.
Yeah. So we'll talk to him. And then as we just continue to talk about the World Team Trials Challenge Tournament, a few things that came up that were interesting. I think the 61 kilogram weight class is one that we've pinpointed as probably the most exciting. And I think this past weekend in Raleigh didn't disappoint. I think it showed us why it's the powder keg of wrestling, because it really was electric.
Yeah. And for the last couple of years, 61 kilos in the U.S. has been awesome, going to the U.S. Open and then the World Team Trials Challenge Tournament. And you start throwing in guys like Cologne and Nation a year ago and some of the high scoring matches they had. Seth Gross throwing 30 points up in a match. Those were a lot of fun. And then this year we saw Cody Brewer and Tyler Graff fireworks in the finals. They're close to 30 some points in the first match, and then the second match are 8 points on the board in the first 20 seconds, and Graff ends it early. And Tyler Graff, when he's looking to score, he can go get points. You know, he went out and put 6 points on the board in a hurry against Nico Megalutis in the finals of the mini tournament to get Cody Brewer. And then he kind of played defense the rest of the way, and I don't think that's when Tyler Graff's at his best, but managed to get his hand raised and won that match, moves on, wins, sweeps the best of three against Cody Brewer, and so he's going to have a Final X battle with Joe Colon. Should be a lot of fun at 61.
How about super heavyweight, both divisions? You got a guy that just is still a true freshman and a guy still...
Two teenagers.
And they're in the finals of Final X.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not that strange anymore because of the youth movement. What we've seen out of these guys, it's, you're not saying, oh my gosh, yeah, this came out of nowhere for these guys. It was, I think both of them still, you watch it and you're like, wow, this is really happening. And they both look good. And we'll start with Gable Steveson, just really picked apart Adam Kuhn, who was a Greco-Roman silver medalist, looked solid.
Wow.
I mean, really did. And you just kind of say, where was that in the NCAA Championship Finals? Because he has the tools. He's a dynamic, explosive wrestler, and he proved
so skilled.
In Raleigh.
He is so skilled, and to put that many points on the board against Kuhn in two matches, that was the Gable that I thought we would see throughout this season, throughout the last year. We didn't see it at Junior Worlds. Didn't have his best tournament over Junior World Championships, and we saw bits and pieces of it in the college season. We didn't see it at the Big Ten Finals. We didn't see it at the NCAA semis. But the guy is so extremely talented, and that was cool to see. When high-level guys go out and open it up like that, that's a lot of fun to watch.
Colton Schultz, Robbie Smith, the veteran. Man, you again, this is a high school kid that is going against an Olympian and winning it. We'll see what happens against Adam Kuhn. I still think that Gwiz and Kuhn are the favorites in their respective styles, but I certainly think those guys can push them. If the right things go in the right way for those guys, it could be an interesting battle.
Well, yeah. The thing with those guys is, I mean, we're talking about age group world champions. Gable's won 3 age group world titles. Colton Schultz won a cadet Greco world title a year ago, or 2 years ago, and then also last year, before he even started his senior year in high school, was a junior world bronze medalist. Really impressive what he has done at such a young age. And so you knew the time was coming. At some point, these guys are going to be in the mix to make senior level world teams and probably win senior world titles. But how soon would we see it? I'm not totally shocked by this. I watched Gable go toe-to-toe with Nick Gwizdowski out at the Olympic Training Center 2 years ago, about a month before Gwiz won a world bronze medal. And that was a competitive match. I saw Gable put points on the board against Kyle Snyder. I think it was like a 10-6 or 9-6 match in a practice match out there. Gable was in on Gwiz to win a practice match and I think got exposed for two. And so it went the other way. But he's very capable, not just, in my opinion, not just making the team this year, but winning a senior world medal. Will we see that version of him in Final X that we saw in Raleigh? So the guy's just got unbelievable upside.
One thing that I think needs to be examined, and I don't know what the solution is. Of course, being on the world team ladder or the U.S. national team that goes to the top three, that involves money. And so being in that third spot's a big deal. So they had the true third matches after the best of three finals. And so you have these guys that lost in the best of three finals going afterward, going against a guy that had just recently won. I'm not sure that's the best system or the fairest system for that guy that lost or gal that lost in the best of three. You got one person going up and the other guy just came off a best of three, possibly three matches. I don't know what the solution is, but it seems like there might be a better way to get that third world team spot or that third national team spot, because that's important for your family and where you are. And there's a guy that just lost in the best of three. I don't know what it is yet, but I think there could be a better way to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is either, because last year they did it where they brought those athletes out to Final X. And so you're requiring them all to travel even more when you could just have it where it is, right?
Yeah. And again, it's you scratch your head because it seems logical to do it all right there. But is it fair for Adam Kuhn to come off of two losses like that and then to just, all right, now I got to get up for a third place match against the guy that just won, and that guy has all the incentive, and to turn around possibly just 15 to 30 minutes later and to be on your A game to be able to do that, it just seems a little unfair. But like you said, you want to fly him out to a different location just to wrestle a true third place match, especially with having two locations now and you're going to have 15 matches. And you add Greco into the mix, it's just going to make for a long day. So I don't know what it is, what the solution could be, but boy, that means money. That means probably health insurance for your family. So in Kuhn's case, he's going to be on the ladder somewhere because he's going to be first or second. He's going to make that Greco money, but I'm sure he's thinking it'd be nice to be on both national teams.
Yeah, and it's not just the money. It's the opportunities, too, being able to go on some of the overseas tours,
yeah,
things like that. There's, you know, being part of those training camps, that's big, probably maybe in some ways bigger than the money, than the stipend itself.
Yeah, and it sets you up going into 2020 for the Olympic year as well. So, I think as we look at, hey, Dieringer looked awesome. Alex Dieringer really looked good in his finals. And I think the question is
strong, energized, focused.
Yeah, he did all of those things. Good too.
Yeah.
And
so good.
We haven't seen Kyle Dake since the Worlds.
Right.
And so what's that going to look like? Dieringer is going to be a tough out. We know from last year that Dake had a really tough match with him at the U.S. Open. And I think Dieringer is going to be one tough dude in that Final X best three. That's going to be one to watch.
Well, it felt like to me last year the United States had probably three of the top six, seven, eight guys in the world at 79 kilos. Well, Saheed gave Dake about as much trouble as anybody from Final X on. I mean, he's the only guy that put points on the board from Final X on against him. Kyle Dake's toughest matches were Dieringer and Saheed last year.
Yeah.
So
you have all that domestically.
Yeah. So whoever comes out at 79 kilos is going to be, I think, in the mix to win a world title.
How about on the women's side? We had a situation where there's three Hawkeye Wrestling Club athletes going against each other in the same weight class. Allie Reagan's waiting for two teammates. One of them was going to get there to wrestle her. And you had Lauren Louive. Great story. I think she's 29 years old, stuck with it. Had a, I think, beat the top seed in that tournament going against a young Michaela Beck. Louive won two of those matches. Beck won the first one. But Hawkeye Wrestling Club looking good in one weight class right there. So that was an interesting storyline.
Yeah, and you had college guys in the corners for each of those ladies. Yeah, where I don't think they wanted to pick sides with whether Tom Brands was going to sit in one corner and Mark Perry was going to go in the other. They didn't do that. They just decided, hey, Paul Glenn and Max Murin, you're going to be in Michaela Beck's corner, and Alex Marinelli was in Lauren the Weave's corner, I think. So, interesting dynamic.
Let's end with this. We had a retirement. Tony Ramos, someone that you covered when you were with Press Citizen.
Yep.
And you had a chance to cover him. Your thoughts on this, because you've covered him for a long time. What'd you think about Tony's retirement?
Thought that it was probably, thought he was probably nearing the end. I thought it would probably, it might go on another year, that he might try to make 57 again. But I think he's just kind of moved to another, you know, the next chapter of his life. And that's coaching and fatherhood. And he had a pretty tremendous career. Couple world teams, NCAA title, Big Ten title, some U.S. Open titles in there. But yeah, it's just a great guy to cover. I mean, he everything you want in an athlete that you cover is somebody that is accessible. I mean, win or lose, he would always show up and answer the questions. He'd answer them honestly. You know, you never felt like you were getting BS from Tony Ramos. You were getting how he felt and give you candid answers, colorful answers. And when you back that up with a guy who wins and has credibility, pretty cool. He thinks outside the box too. And, you know, I've just always appreciated covering Tony Ramos. I haven't agreed with everything that he's said. I didn't agree with how he handled the Olympic trial situation in 2016, but I've always appreciated what he was about.
Two rivals retire this year. They, Logan Stieber, Tony Ramos, wrestle each other. You have both of them out this year.
Yep. So,
two people we remember fondly, and I made the sport better. And it's fun to be able to reflect on those guys and appreciate all they've done for wrestling.
It's weird that we see it happen a year before an Olympic year.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you don't get to end things the way you want. And Logan's case, I think his body was telling him it was time. I think Tony's dealing with some other things outside of wrestling a little bit that, you know, I think he indicated to you, like a situation with one of his little ones that popped up here last week that probably puts some things in perspective too. It's good though to see that, you know, they're going out at a time where they feel at ease at, you know, they feel like this is like the timing's right. And both guys accomplished a lot in the sport and they've given quite a bit to wrestling.
How about we get some perspective from Kerry McCoy?
Sounds good.
Our guest today, two-time Olympian, two-time NCAA wrestling champion. He was also a world silver medalist in 2003. Kerry McCoy is our guest. How are you, Kerry?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, great to have you on. I also didn't mention that you used to play the cello. We'll just get it out of the way. You do not play the cello anymore.
Yeah, there was a time that went by that I couldn't step into an arena without having an announcer mention that. And it's been quite a few years, but it's definitely a big part of my history and my upbringing and something that I'm very proud of. So it's definitely something to be fun about. One of the trivia questions that I'm sure will be around at some point in the future.
Why do you think that caught on so much? Because that's one of my early memories in wrestling, was that you played the cello. I can just remember that article coming out and people loved it. Why do you think people gravitated toward it so much?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with just the degrees of separation between, you know, being a wrestler and being in the orchestra. I think that's really what it was, is you didn't see, especially back then, you didn't see that crossover too much with sports and arts like that. So, you know, and I played all through elementary school and high school. And then in college, I think it was my junior year, is when it was, actually on our cover of a media guide. There was a picture of me with my cello and, on the cover of the media guide. So I think that's when it started getting a lot more traction. But yeah, it's pretty cool just to have those two worlds collide, and a lot of similarities between music and athletics and a lot of differences. And, you know, I was fortunate to be able to experience them both.
If someone put a cello in front of you, could you do any damage to it?
Oh, I could do some damage for real. I don't know if I could make any music, but it would be, it'd be fun. Yeah. There was a one song that I had committed to memory and I could play it pretty good. And I know I remember about 5 or 6 notes right now, so that would probably be the best of it. But I think about it a lot is that if push came to shove, and you know, I took a couple of days, maybe a week or so, I think I could probably get back to a point where I could play a little bit. But it would take a while to get back to the swing where I feel like I could actually say that I'm making music.
Didn't you find a video that you did for like Big Brothers Big Sisters or something recently?
Yeah. It's a pretty cool story. It wasn't Big Brothers, but it was kind of like a youth organization and leadership and mentorship. And it was called Flow. It's like getting the inner something out of you, something like that. I have to look it up, and it was a scene where there was a young girl who was a cellist, and she was kind of getting stuck with things in life and with the cello. And I was the one that was, somebody brought me in, her teacher brought me in to talk about not giving up and persevering and the fact that I played a cello. So, and that was actually it. There was that song that I had, you know, that 5 or 6 notes that I remembered, and I would play that. And they did some creative editing, I think, to make me seem a little bit better of a player than I was. But it was a fun time for sure.
You grew up in New York. Andy Hamilton is a huge Yankees fan. Did you grow up a Yankees fan?
Well, not really. No, contrary to popular belief, I'm not really that big of a sports fan. I've never really been. So in 86, I think it was, when the Mets won the World Series, I had the fortune of going to a regular season game. My stepdad got tickets and we went to it. And I remember when they won the World Series, I thought it was pretty cool that I actually went to watch the team that ended up winning the World Series play, but I wasn't really into too many sports to watch and to be a fan of. I did the things that I did and, you know, just kind of went about my way. So after leaving the island, going to school and you know, college and international, I started to become a little bit more of a fan, but I started to like the Yankees more, probably just like everyone else, because they were so good and so dominant and, you know, they just kick butt all the time. So I would say I liked them. I wouldn't say I was necessarily a fan, but I liked them because of what they were able to accomplish and the success that they were able to have.
Did you have a solid upbringing growing up? Good family life?
I think it was a good, it was non-traditional, I would say. My parents were not together. So growing up, my dad went away to college, when I was born, and you know, he was back and forth in and out of my life, and so I was raised by my mom primarily. But you know, growing up, we had a very strong family. You know, the first 3 or 4 years of my life, we lived very close to my aunts and uncles and my grandmother, so had them to help raise. And then as we got older, my mom was on her own a little bit, but we always had family that was close by, and you know, go see my grandmother, my cousins and stuff on the weekends. So a non-traditional background, raised by a single parent. But then when my mom was when I was 9, my mom got married to my stepdad, so you know, we had a little bit more of a stable, traditional foundation at that point. We lived with him, and you know, my sister and brothers were born, and you know, that was a little more, but it was still, I had a connection with my dad. He just wasn't around as much as traditionally you would see, but then I had my stepdad that was there. And so we had that dynamic going. Really the family that was on, the closest, you know, thing to a traditional family was my teammates and the family, the parents in the wrestling community, and my coaches. You know, when I started in 7th grade, that's where I spent the most of my time with. And then, you know, on a regular basis, and like I said, on the weekends, we'd spend time with family. In the summers, I'd go see time with my dad and my dad's family. But, you know, every day through, once I started wrestling, it was my teammates and my coaches, and that became a big part of my family outside of, you know, the relationship I had with my mom and my siblings, my stepdad.
Who among that group introduced you to wrestling, or maybe it was someone else that introduced you?
Yeah, it actually, I've told the story tons of times. When I thought about wrestling, I thought of, you know, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Jimmy Snuka. Those are the people I thought about. So when I was in 7th grade, one of my best friends from elementary school, he was in kid wrestling. He started wrestling when he was 5, like most people do. And seventh grade was the first year that our school had traditional organized sports in our school district. And wrestling was one of the sports, wrestling and track and field. So I said, okay. I was just kind of tired of running around, going to school, going home, playing around. I just wanted something different. And so with my friend Mike, he said, well, why don't you come out for wrestling? And I said, yeah, you know, I see it all the time. It's going to be fun. It's going to be cool. And, you know, that's kind of how I got into it. But I had no concept. No one in my family had wrestled. You know, I knew nothing about the sport, but it was one of my elementary school friends that mentioned it. I showed up and first day of practice, you know, I fell in love with it. And I, again, I tell the story all the time. I wasn't very good. I had no idea what I was doing. We start off, you know, first practice, most wrestling programs, you run a lot and coach comes in and says, start running. And I didn't like running then. I don't like running now, but you know, it was something about just the atmosphere involved in that room that, you know, made me realize that I'm going to do this for a long time.
I know you know Jerry Briscoe, who's with WWE. Did you ever think about a professional wrestling career at some point?
I did. I did. Ironically enough, so obviously Kurt Angle, we had some battles in relationship with Kurt, and he went on and had a great career. Going into 2000, you know, there was a little storyline that was brewing between, you know, Kurt and the WWE, and then myself and Rulon Gardner were, you know, looking to do some stuff. And obviously after Rulon won the gold, he had a pretty good path to stardom. And I was, you know, after beating Stephen Neal in 99, you know, I was, one of the guys that picked potentially the win in 2000. And, you know, so the kind of storyline would have been between me and Kurt and Rulon, Olympic gold medalist, and trying to go that route. But obviously I didn't win. And so that kind of went away. And I always thought about it again, going back to when I started in seventh grade. You know, I enjoyed it. It was something that I watched religiously back then. So it was something that I thought it would have been pretty cool, but kind of faded away with my competitive career and then my professional career after that. But, you know, I always look back at those times and say it would have been pretty cool if Kurt, Rulon, and I, you know, had some kind of storyline in the WWE, if we were all Olympic champions, and that would have been a cool deal, but didn't work out that way.
And then you went 0-0 referee's decision. Kurt Angle won that in 1996, the year he won a gold medal. But if I remember right, you guys actually had a chance to meet later. You introduced your kids to him here within the last couple of years. What's that been like for your kids to meet one of your former competitors?
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, it's one of the things that makes our sport great. You know, it's about the relationships, the wins and the losses, the matches, the competition, all of that stuff is, you know, it's part of it, but it's really, you know, I went this past weekend, I went up to State College and Coach Lorenzo was getting inducted in the Hall of Fame and, you know, a bunch of his former wrestlers were up there. It was great to be around there. And I don't think you heard one thing about a match or a competition. It was always about the experience you had and the camaraderie you built. So that's what's great. So, you know, I've got a really good relationship with Stephen Neal, who we battled. I've got a relationship with Holly Thompson, who we battled. Aaron Richardson and obviously Kurt. And so it was probably, I'd say maybe 6 years ago, he was doing an appearance at a Bowie Bay Sox game. It's the minor league baseball team here. And I heard about it. I was like, oh yeah, it'd be cool to go down there. And I mean, there was a line, probably 200 people online to see him. And I had my wife and my kids there. And I was like, well, you know, to get an autograph and all that stuff. And I said, well, you know, we didn't have time to wait on the whole line. Kids had to get home to get to bed. So I said, I'm just going to peek up here and just nod, say hello, and roll away. So I go up and, you know, I just kind of got his attention. And he talked to somebody and they go to the back of the line. They pull up to the front of the line. And, you know, he sits and talks with us. We take a couple of pictures. And I would say that's just awesome, you know, for not only just another wrestler, but somebody of his stature to take that time and energy to chat with me and my family. And the kids thought it was pretty cool. And we don't watch professional wrestling, you know, as a family too often, but, you know, I went in and I showed some of our matches to them and they thought it was pretty cool that, you know, I knew somebody that was famous and, that they kind of got the VIP treatment.
Prime against prime, how would a match between Kurt Angle and Kyle Snyder look?
Oh, man. See, those are the type of questions you try to get me in trouble by asking.
Of course we are. I mean, that's what's fun. I mean, yeah, I don't want to get on the line. I want you to get.
You know, there are some some amazing battles. It's really ironic because Kurt Style, similar weight class, obviously 97 kilos and 100 kilos. Kurt Style was a lot more slick with power, where Kyle is more of a grinding power, but he's got some slickness in there. So it'd be fun to watch. That's what I'll say. It's one of those things where I don't know if Kyle could ankle pick Kurt Angle, and I don't know if Kurt Angle could duck under Kyle Snyder. So it'd be fun to see which one of those came out. But, definitely would be fun to watch, and I'm not going to pick a winner.
Right. Hey, it was a different era of Penn State wrestling. Penn State was good when you went there, but of course not national championship good, not 8 out of 9 good, but they were a team that was challenging Iowa. Why did you decide to go from New York to Penn State?
It was really, I guess a lot of things with me have unique stories. Not too many things that I've done are just been kind of simple, just popped in here. So how I got there, the first part is a guy named Jason Kraft, Jason Russell in Nebraska, but he went to my rival high school, which Dan Mayo, who was All-American, Penn State, same high school there. And he went to that high school. And so Jason was being recruited by Penn State, and we were rivals, and we were friends, but we always were, the rival high school. And so he thought it would be a cool idea that after all these years of being rivals, that maybe we could be teammates. So he told the Penn State coaches about me and, wanted to have an opportunity for us to go to school. He was set on going to Penn State. And so in our rival match, the Penn State coaches came to watch him, and he said, hey, yeah, keep an eye on this McCoy kid. He's pretty good. So that's really what opened the door for Penn State. And Jason ended up going to Nebraska, and I ended up going to Penn State. So it's kind of ironic how he opened the door for me to get there. When I first started looking at Penn State, so to put it in perspective, in New York, all of the state schools, for the most part, are Division III athletics. They're not big-time athletic programs. So when I hear, State University of Pennsylvania, I'm thinking State University of New York. So I'm thinking they're not these really big-time programs. So I didn't have a whole lot of knowledge about the process. I wrestled because it was fun and I enjoyed it. I wasn't really looking at it in that capacity. So I had no clue about Penn State. And when I was looking at my schools, I was really academically inclined in high school. I was looking at the Ivy League schools. And then, I was a big fan of Michigan, Lehigh. They had Sergey Belgorod was a coach there. And Matt Ruppel had won a national championship the year before as a 190-pounder. So, there were a lot of these schools they were looking at, and Penn State was actually on the bottom of my list when I started looking at schools. I went on my visits and I narrowed it down and came down to Penn State and Michigan were the last two schools that I chose. And, when I think back to it, there's a lot of different factors, but the one thing that really stood out was when I was trying to narrow down my choices, I knew that I wanted to make an Olympic team and have an international career. All of the, the regional tournaments, the national tournaments, the big, big events that I went to, Penn State always had, 10, 12, 15 athletes competing at these events. And a lot of those schools, they would have 3 or 4, 5 or 6. But so I knew Penn State's commitment to freestyle Greco wrestling was really high. Second, all the other places that I went on my visits, they were, I felt like I was on a recruiting visit, which I was. But when I went to Penn State, so ironically enough, I went to Michigan Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I went to Penn State Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Well, Friday, the trip at Michigan was when the Fab Five, they won their Final Four game to make it to the finals. So Michigan was pretty exciting that weekend. And I went to Penn State, and actually after my visit to Michigan, I was set on going to Michigan, but I had my visit at Penn State, so I told the coaches, I got to honor this visit. It's already set up. And, if nothing crazy happens, I'll probably end up at Michigan. I went to Penn State and Sunday night we went to a movie. Monday night we watched the championship game. And I remember telling people on my visit, I said, oh yeah, I'm going to be going to school with those guys next year. It's going to be great. I'm going to be, hanging out with the Fab Five. But the whole time of my Penn State visit, I felt like I was at home. I was hanging out with my buddies. They didn't treat me like some high school kid that they just said, hey, this is what it is. So I think that's really the biggest thing that made it the combination of their commitment to international wrestling and the fact that when I was there, they treated me just like I was a part of the team, not somebody that they were trying to get to become a part of the team. So that's what it came down to. And I was far enough away from home that I felt like I was away, but I was close enough that I could get home and, you know, go home on my mom's birthday, see her when I needed to see her, they could come and visit me. So that's kind of how it all played out.
You go to Penn State, you wrestle at 190 your freshman year. You have a 500 record. Your 500 record your freshman year. You bump up to heavyweight, and then you only lose one match the remaining 2 years or 3 years. You get first, third, and first. What happened there, Kerry? How did you make a turnaround like that?
It just came down to, you know, I had great coaches, great partners. I had a great environment. I tell a story about you got to have those big, ugly, audacious goals and, kind of like the things that you want to put in the universe and that some people, when you say it, they're going to think it's crazy. You know, after that freshman year, got a lot of experience, got a lot of competition. You know, I felt like I knew what I needed to do, but I was really, really angry with how the year went. That my freshman year, I think I beat three guys that ended up being All-Americans that year. And, so to see them on the podium when I felt, you know, I'd beaten them, we were one controversial match away from winning a team title. So that was pretty frustrating, but I was really upset. And I just said, it sounds cliche, but I don't like the way this feels and I don't ever want to feel this way again. And I said it, I'm never going to lose another match. And, people hear and they say, yeah, okay, that's something. But for me, it wasn't just, I'm never going to lose, but I'm going to make sure I do everything that I'm going to put myself in position to be successful every time. So that summer, I think I competed in seven competitions. I went to a couple national championships. I went to a couple international tournaments. I was at the training center. I was still training and working to get better, 6 days a week through the entire spring and summer, where a lot of other guys were, not just in our team, but in general, a lot of other guys were taking time recovering. And I just knew it, that I have to get better, and I don't like the way this feels. So I just put myself in a position that I could be successful. I was originally planning on going 190 my sophomore year. Again, everything kind of, for me, has a twist of the story, but the way it worked out is our wrestle off were one weekend. The next weekend was the Sunkist International Tournament, and the following week was our first competition. So I discussed with my coaches, because back then, even more so than now, the wrestle off were, they were to get the starting lineup, but it was really to showcase the team to our fans. So back then we did a tournament. They seeded the bracket. You'd wrestle through the entire day, just like an open tournament. So the fans could come and they can watch and see you wrestle, two or three different guys, four or five different matches. The final wrestle off was a 2 out of 3 series. So I told my coaches I really wanted to participate, but I didn't want to go down to 190. And then, cause I was going to wrestle 220 freestyle. So I didn't want to go down to 190 and then move back up to 220 for the tournament and then cut back down to 190 for the first competition. So I asked him, just so I could participate in the wrestle off, just to be a part of the event, then I'd wrestle off at heavyweight, and then I'd go 220, and then I'd cut down to 190. Now, I was leaving workouts when I came back, 208, 207. So I was right on pace to get down to 190 in, September, October, but I didn't want to wrestle 198 because a lot of my training partners in freestyle were 198 counters. So I wanted to be able to have good training partners that weren't my competition. So that's why I was set up on 220. My coaches agreed and, wrestled off and, I ended up winning, I won the matches. So technically I secured the spot, but I was going to go down to 190 when I got back. Went off to Sunkist, wrestled there, ended up taking third at 220. Came back. Well, the guy that I was wrestling off, he got a little banged up. He wasn't to compete. So they said, okay, we'll just stay at heavyweight this match, and then we can get you down in a couple weeks after Thanksgiving. So I went up, and I think I won. I think we had a duel. We had a tournament. I won the tournament. And then, came back the next couple of weeks. He still was nursing an injury, so I stayed up. And then we got to Thanksgiving, and it was the Mattel tournament. We wrestled Oklahoma State. I think we wrestled Oklahoma State on Friday, and the Mattel tournament was on Sunday. And, you know, won my match against Oklahoma State guy. And then, you know, I went and I won the tournament, the Mattel Open at heavyweight. And, you know, my coaches said, just keep eating. And so that's how I stayed up at heavyweight. And then, you know, by first week in December, I was undefeated, like 20-0, and I was ranked 7th in the country. And, you know, a couple weeks later, I'd wrestled a couple of top ranked guys, and slowly, it was just like one of those things, well, yeah, this is where you're going to be. But so it wasn't by design that I moved up. It was just, you know, circumstance led it that way. But the work and the effort and the opportunities that I got between my freshman and sophomore year really made a difference for me. But like I said, it comes back to it. And some people always look at it and say, yeah, it really can't be that simple that you just made a decision. I said, well, that's for me what it was. I made a decision that I don't like the way this feels, and I don't ever want to feel this way again. And I'm not going to allow myself to cut any corners or to leave any stone unturned. So, you know, if you beat me, you beat me because you're better than me, but you're not going to beat me because I didn't work. And not to say that I didn't work my freshman year. I mean, I think I worked my butt off my freshman year, but it was different. You know, first year in college, wrestling in a Big Ten schedule, you know, I didn't really know what I didn't know. So after going through that year, I was like, yeah, I've got to get better technically. I've got to get better shape. I got to get stronger. I got to, you know, I just got to get better. And, you know, it worked out pretty well.
You were so close to winning out. You had the one loss. You're about to break Gable's record in Carver Hawkeye Arena in 1995. And then, of course, Justin Greenlee from the University of Northern Iowa, and he was a fan favorite because all of the Iowa fans were behind him, Iowa State, UNI. When you go into that match, did you feel the pressure of potentially breaking Gable's record in Carver Hawkeye Arena?
I mean, it's tough to say. I'd like to say no, you know, from back here. But, you know, we going through the first year, just wrestling, and then probably after we hit 75, people started talking about the streak. And, you know, every time, just like anything else, you know, every time you compete, it starts talking about it. And I was set on my goal to just, you know, win every time I step foot on the mat. And, you know, so maybe in the back of my head somewhere there was a little bit of it. But, you know, I think that that's where we got into, because in that match, again, it's a controversial match, you know, I always had a strategy, always had a game plan, but it was just about wrestling, you know, my style and going that way. And we kind of had a contingency plan with that match. You know, I had wrestled Justin 3 times before and I beat him every time. So he had never ridden me. He never turned me, but he was a monster on top. He was a monster, you know, in those positions. So going into the match, hey, if we get there, we had a plan. Say, okay, you get the first takedown. If you don't need to go down, you know, stay on your feet, stay in your best position, which, that makes sense. And I still, you know, it was my best position. That's what I did. We got in. It was just a tough call by the official. I was in a crackdown position and, you know, he was big. He kind of scooted the corner and, you know, you go back and look at the video and say, was that two or not? But he got that takedown and, you know, that ended up being, cause I had taken him out at riding time and that ended up being the difference because I had to ride him, get the time, then I cut him. And then I chased him around the mat for a minute and a half and I couldn't get the takedown and couldn't get a stall call. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things. It was, you know, maybe I was thinking about it in the back of my head, but, you know, I think that it was one of those deals where, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. And I was pretty upset about it, but, you know, it was a pretty cool thing to get there and be that close to Gable. And I remember someone said to me a couple of years ago when Kale broke Gable's record, someone said to me, you know, you realize how close you are for him to be chasing your record. Because if I didn't lose that match, in essence, it would have, you know, in theory, it would have been 131-0 at the weight class. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool just to be in that conversation. And for a while, I was, you know, top whatever 5-6 of consecutive wins. And then, you know, a couple more people would come in and knock me a little bit further down the ladder. But it's a pretty cool process and, you know, something that people can talk about. Again, another trivia question.
That was in 1995. You got third. So you won it over Greenlee in 94, third in 95. You redshirted in 96, and then you won it in 97 at the Unidome on the campus of Northern Iowa. We look at eras, and we're in a great era for heavyweights right now, but you had a special era. Stephen Neal, you, Tolly Thompson, And then even if you throw in Jason Gleason, who was an Olympian as well in Greco-Roman, you have to be proud that you're in an era that you had three world medalists, you had gold, silver, and bronze. You're competing against some really tough guys. What's that like knowing that you have two championships in maybe the toughest era in heavyweight?
Everything's a relativity. I think we had some really good guys. You know, it's still, again, one of those debates that people will talk about. In 97 in the NCAA tournament, the All-Americans, there were seven returning All-Americans. There were two returning national champions and an Olympian in that weight class. That was the top eight guys that were All-Americans that year. So, you know, and I'm sure there were times where, you know, they had similar type of characteristics or people that went on later or eventually became, but that they said in that year, that's what it was. There were seven returning All-Americans, two returning champs and an Olympian in the weight class. And, you know, like I said, people that went on ended up doing some pretty cool stuff, world medals, world titles, you know, WWE stars. So it's pretty cool to do that. And that's, again, that's what makes wrestling great, because the wins and losses are pretty fun to talk about, but it's really about the experience and how after the 97 tournament, you know, I beat Stephen Neal in the finals, and in the hotel lobby, his family and my family, you know, we hung out and we just hung out for 2 or 3 hours just talking about random stuff. It wasn't about wrestling. It wasn't about, you know, who won the match. It was just, you know, people in there hanging out and having a good time. So, you know, it's pretty cool to be during that time, and the people that, you know, I got to compete with and got to learn, you know, I think I have a connection with them forever.
Stephen Neal's a unique guy, went on to play football and was a world champion in 1999. Do you still have a relationship with Stephen Neal to this day?
I do. You know, it was pretty cool. So again, about the experiences, about the events and memories, not necessarily the competition. This summer, we were out in California, you know, Team USA trained in San Diego, at Camp Pendleton. And at one point in the room, myself, Stephen Neal, Nick Wazowski, and, who was this fourth one? We had four world medalists, and, you know, we were all together, and just like, you know, you took out Holly Thompson and you take out, Steve Mocco, and it was like from, you know, 2000 to 2018, you know, in 18 years, all of the representatives at heavyweight, all the people that have won medals, all the people that were in the Olympics, you know, so it was pretty cool to take that picture. And then later that night, we went to the gala, and Bruce Baumgartner was there. So then it's like you had another 20 years of world and Olympics and medals and all that stuff. So to have the five of us in that picture, I think the only three guys that were not present, you know, during that time that were Tolly Thompson, who took a bronze, like I said, Steve Mocco, who was the 08 Olympian, and Tommy Rollins, who was the 07 world team member. So from that time, you know, from 1979 to 2018, we had all the U.S. representatives at heavyweight, and, you know, all the medals that were won, with the exception of one, in the same place. So
would that have been Tervell?
Cool thing to see.
Was that Tervell that was there?
Tervell. Yep. Yeah. Okay. It was Tervell. Yeah. Okay.
Now, hey, going back to a few years after when you graduated, you made an Olympic team in 2000, but a young Andy Hamilton wrote a story about Steve Mocco being a monster on the mat in high school and maybe being competitive with you when he was in high school. What's real? What's fiction about you guys wrestling, and how did those matches go if you guys trained together?
They were intense. When he was in high school, you know, and it's a great thing for a competitive athlete. He may have had a little bit of, you know, the respect for his elders when he was in high school, when he was a sophomore, junior in high school. So, you know, the workouts were pretty competitive and, you know, high intensity. Obviously, anyone knows Steve Mocco. He's a monster with hand fighting and just grinding down people. And I was okay with, being a hand fight and stuff. So we did a lot of hand fighting and leg attack. He was hard to score and I was hard to score. So we get in and get some battles. And, you know, sometimes we just get out there and just brawl for an hour. And, you know, he'd get some, I'd get some, he'd get none, I'd get none, however it worked out. But what the cool thing is how he evolved through the years, where we actually got to the point where we competed in 2004 in the finals. And, and we trained through the training camps. And also, it was cool that, you know, to see his development over time to become one of the best heavyweights, you know, in the history of college wrestling, then obviously make an Olympic team. And, you know, it was cool that knowing him and seeing that progress. And he made me better, just like all those guys, because I knew there was no way you're going to slack. If you're going to wrestle Steve Mako, you got to be on your game and keep your feet moving so you don't get foot swept and, you know, don't get pawed down with the hand fighting, and, you know, be able to be pretty good on bottom if you get taken down, and, you know, try to get a turn if you get on top. So definitely had some good battles, and it helped me be a lot better knowing that he was down there chasing after me.
You owned that super heavyweight class in the United States from 2000 to 2004, made two Olympic teams, had that world silver medal in 2003 in New York City. When you look back at your career, was there anything you could have done, tweaks you would have made that could have got you that gold medal?
So in 2000, and this is something I've talked about a little bit in recent years, I felt good. In 2000, I was undefeated. I'd beaten a lot of guys. Training was going good. Obviously, I'd beaten the returning world champ to make the team. So I just knew that I was the best in the world. And where I think about looking back is, I think I was a little bit too focused on winning a gold medal instead of focusing on just going out there and wrestling the best that I can be. You know, the two kind of go hand in hand, but I think about if you focus on going out and executing, then the results are going to come. But to me, it was like, I'm going to win a gold. I'm going to win a gold. I'm here to win a gold. And in that match against Taimazov in the quarters, you know, I just come off, I beaten a good guy from Ukraine, the guy from Azerbaijan, I think was fourth in the world the year before, and I beat him pretty good. So I think I was just like, okay, yeah, I'm one step close to winning this gold medal, instead of thinking about just go out there and wrestle your best. So in that match, I got snapped down, run behind, I got a trap door gut, and in my head, I said, I'm going to tech fall this guy, and then I'm going to be in the medal match. You know, because you win the quarters, you're in the semis. You win the semis, you go for gold. You lose the semis, you wrestle for bronze. So I, you know, I wasn't thinking about wrestling. I think I'm going to tech ball this dude. And, it, you know, there's no way to measure how that plays into it. But, you know, in that flurry, and again, it's a controversial situation, but in that flurry, I tried to force another trapdoor gut. He scrambled out of it, got to a front chest wrap. He turned me, and, you know, so I went from being up 3-0 to being down 4-3, and then I kind of panicked a little bit. Okay, I'm down 4-3. You know, I don't think I had a point scored on me the whole year, if even, you know, 1 or 2 points. So now I'm down by, you know, I wasn't losing any matches in 2000 for sure. And so now I'm down by a point. I start, you know, pushing the pace and getting a little bit. It's like, I got to win. Made a couple of mistakes and, you know, gave him another takedown. And I gave up a 3-pointer right at the end of the period. And so I was losing 8-3 at the break. And like I said, you know, I hadn't given up many points, let alone I didn't give up 8 points the whole year, and I just gave up 8 points in 3 minutes. And so after that, you know, I went back to the corner and I was able to refocus. I just got to go ahead and run. And, you know, so obviously down by 5 points, it's a little bit different perspective. And so I went back and kind of chopped it down and ended up losing 8-7 in that quarterfinal match. So, execution wise, you know, look back and say, yeah, just focus on wrestling, focus on competing. And, you know, when I got that trapped arm, if I don't try to force the position, you know, I'm up 3-0 with 4.5 and 5 minutes left to wrestle, you know, and you're not scoring on me in that circumstance. So technically I can look at that. As far as training and preparation, I believe 100% that I did everything that I needed to do to be the best in the world. And, you know, I was out at the training center. I had great partners, had great coaching. So it's just one of those things that was a, you know, a mental tactical error in that match. And then, through the next couple of years, they take ups and downs. 2003 in the finals, you know, it's like one of those things, jack of all trades, master of none. And in 2003, I had a lot of weapons from the clinch. This is the old body clinch position. I had a lot of options from there. And, I would practice, you know, 5 or 6 different options. So when I got to the finals in 2003, you know, I got to the position, I got locked in, and I said, okay, if he does this, I'm going to do this. If he does this, I'm going to do that. And just because I had so many options, you know, I went for one and he made an adjustment. I tried to go to another one and my foot slipped out. You know, that's the match. Whereas if I, you know, just focus on, you look back at Jamil Kelly in 2004, you know, he had one or two things that he did every time for the clinch. And when he got the clinch, he knew what he was doing every time. And so I look back and again, technically, strategically, if I was focused on a few less options, I think once I got to that position, then, you know, I just do this. And then maybe I win. If not, you know, I don't flip. I give it the one and I come back and I you know, I get the win in overtime. So a couple of tactical things that I think really kept me from winning the gold medals in those competitions. But I believe 100% that preparation and attitude and focus, you know, getting ready was great. You know, so when I walk away from those things, I say it just wasn't meant to be. It wasn't part of God's plan for me to be an Olympic or world champ. But I think it's also an opportunity that those areas that, you know, that I fell a little short made me a better coach and made me a better parent, made me a better husband, because I know that you've got to have the right things in your mind if you want to be successful in those other areas.
Let's break down a situation in 2002. Really didn't have anything to do with technical or tactical or anything. You're an assistant coach at Lehigh. 184-pound finals. Rob Roan, you're in the corner. Josh Lambrecht's going to beat him. He's up by 12. And Roan hits the cement mixer. I mean, what are you thinking right there? I mean, because you went nuts in the corner. I can't imagine there's a situation where you would have been more excited or more crazy. Take us through what you were thinking when that happened.
Yeah, so a little background on that. Rob had a really challenging year that year as a senior. And so I came in the year before, or 2 years before, as a sophomore. He was an All-American. I come in his junior year. So sophomore year, he was a conference champ. He won the EIWA. He was an All-American. I come in junior year. We're working. He's one of the guys I'm spending time with. And he loses in the conference finals, and he doesn't place at the NCAA tournament. So I'm like, what the heck? I've broken this kid. Like, he was good before I got here, and now, so then he comes back his senior year. He has an up and down year. You know, being a senior, he had some stuff going on at home, and he was battling a lot of things, getting ready to graduate, his future plans. So just had a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, but he was making some real good progress. He beat Lambrecht early in the year and, you know, beat a couple of good guys. Well, he goes to the conference tournament and he got hurt. He tore his rotator cuff or tore his labor something. And, but he lost in the finals again. So I'm like, oh, here we go again. He's, you know, he didn't win the conference. You know, he's hurt right now. So, you know, what are we going to do? And we came together with a plan. I just, you know, I remember I was driving back from the conference room and I sent him a message. I'm like, hey, do you trust me? And he wrote back, of course. I said, no, really, do you trust me? He's like, yeah, I'll do whatever you say. So he was a big weight room guy. Like, he loved lifting weights. He loved getting strong. You know, that was one of his strengths, literally and figuratively, that he was stronger than a lot of guys he competed with. So I said, hey, we're not going to lift for the next 10 days, right? You got to get healed up. You got to get your shoulder ready. We're just going to work on position, you know, mental focus, preparation, and a couple of errors. We did a lot of stance of motion, a lot of hand fighting. Didn't wrestle live very much, but it was just like just being around them and, you know, with the other guys, we're really just talking about, hey, we've got to go out there and perform. We got to go out here and execute. We got to do this stuff. And he got to the NCAA tournament. He was just on fire. He got a major decision in his first match, and then he pinned all the next few guys. But in that finals match, it was pretty crazy because I just had in my head, like, he's going to win. Like, I knew he was going to win. I just felt that he was going to win. And, you know, as the points kept tallying up, I'm like, okay, so he's going to shoot a double leg and he's going to roll him up and he's going to, you know, get a bunch of points, or, you know, he's going to win this. And then, so I honestly can get back to that. There was never a doubt in my mind that he was going to win. And as the points kept piling up, I'm like, okay, I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to do it. So when he got to actually rewind it. In his college career, I think he had two pins in his entire career. So now he's pinned three out of four guys in the NCAA tournament, you know, so now it's setting up, now he's getting his butt kicked. So it's like, all right, we don't know what's going to happen. It's like, something's got to go here. And when he goes and hits the cement, it was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is how it's going to go? And it's like, all right, you know, he's going to get off his back and we're going to take him down and, you know, we'll figure out how we're going to get the points in. You know, he keeps on his back. He works his way all the way around and finally gets the pin. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, and I don't know if you remember. It's like, I don't even remember. I feel like I jumped up on the stage and I ran out to the middle of the mat because everything that he had gone through, everything that we'd gone through together, and for him to win it that way, it was pretty awesome. But yeah, it was, it was one of those things that you couldn't have scripted his senior year any better.
Right. Now you're in a situation where you just resigned your position at Maryland. Why the decision to step away, Kerry?
You know, it was just the right thing to do. You know, my kids are, you know, about to be 10 and 11, so 9 and 10 this year, and they're starting to get more actively engaged in things. And, you know, there was a lot of time when they were growing up that I wasn't around. And, you know, primarily because I just, you know, had a little bit of misplaced values, thinking that, hey, I've got to be here in the office and I got to be here with these guys and have to do this stuff. And, you know, so fortunately about, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I realized that, no, I have to make some adjustments to that. And, you know, with our team, and we had some really good things going on, but it was just, you know, I felt like the last couple of years I was being called to do something else. I love coaching. I loved our program. I love everything we were doing. And, but it was time to do something else. So, you know, this is the last year of my contract. A couple of years ago when I had a chance to extend, I got a 2-year extension. So I knew this is the last year, and, you know, had conversations with the administration about what the plan was, and, you know, what are the criteria, what are things we need to do. And so I'm kind of knowing in the back of my head that, you know, it was going to be time for me to do something else. And whether it was, you know, make the decision now or make it in 6 months or whatever, you know, the decision is going to be made. So when we sat down and talked about it, you know, we knew it was the right time, and, you know, to make a change with the program. And it definitely was something for me that, you know, for me personally, it's a great move for my family. It's a great investment to do something else. Be able to spend time with my family, which in the last couple of years, I haven't been able to do as much as I could or probably even should. So that's a big difference on, you know, why this is a good thing for us. And obviously the program hadn't had the amount of success that some people were expecting, you know, myself included. But, you know, when you look at overall, you look at the last 11 years at University of Maryland, you compare it to, you know, any other 11-year period, the program has done pretty well. And if you look at, you know, a lot of other programs in the last 11 years, you know, we did okay. So I think that's the thing that also makes it easy to make this decision and make this move, is because I know that the program is better off than it was when I got it here. You know, and that's really the ultimate goal, is make something better. And I truly believe that our program is in a better position than it was 11 years ago when we got here. And, you know, that's all you can really ask for.
Kerry, what's next for you?
Well, the last few weeks has really just been, like I said, getting an opportunity to spend time with family and increasing our relationships and doing things with my wife and kids. You know, I have a few opportunities to just figure out what's the best thing for me. You know, it's one of those things where I honestly believe in God's plan for us all, and he's got a plan for me, and he's always had a plan for me. And like I said, the last few years, he's been kind of tapping me on the shoulder saying, hey, you know, come on, time to do something different. So now it's for me to sit back and have him show me what that something different is. I'm starting to make some contacts and, you know, applying and interviewing for some things, but, you know, I don't want it to be, well, it's not my decision. It's not what do I want to be, it's where he wants me. So, you know, college athletic administration has always been something that I believe is going to be the next step. Working in the Olympic family is something that I'm truly passionate about. You know, something involved with the ministry. So I'm always going to be linked to wrestling. I'm always going to be linked to, you know, sports. And it's just a matter of what capacity God's going to put me there and, you know, get the most out of me. So I'm enjoying civilian life right now. You know, I've seen you guys at some of the competitions, so I'm still connected to the sport. I'll always be connected to sport, but it's really just, you know, waiting and being patient and trusting that God's going to put me where I belong.
You said that you left Maryland in a better place. You also said that you had hoped that you could have had a little more success than what you had. Hindsight being 2020, going back, what things would you maybe have done differently?
Well, that's, you know, I think that's kind of one of those questions that are easy to speculate, but, you know, I think everything happens for a reason, and I believe that everything, you know, that we did, I don't know how much I would have changed, what I would have done differently. You know, one of the biggest challenges that we faced was accountability, and, you know, holding each other accountable as athletes, holding each other accountable as coaches, holding each other accountable as administration. And, you know, just being able to really make sure that the people that are involved in the program are truly committed to making the program be the best that it can be. I'm a type of person, I look for the good in all. I believe that, you know, everybody can be successful. The idea of success is a relative term. You know, what's successful for you and what's successful for me might be different. But just making sure that everybody involved with the program is 100% committed to helping the program be the best that it can be. And I think those are some things that, you know, maybe I took for granted that, hey, you know, if Johnny says, hey, I want to be the best that I can be and I really care about it, you know, there's a saying, it's like, you know, if you tell me something or show me, you know, actions speak louder than words. So, you know, you can tell me that you're committed, you want to be the best that you can be, you want the program to be successful, but your actions are showing something different. And, you know, taking some of those things and saying, yeah, okay, I know you screwed up here, but I believe that you want to be better, so I'm going to help you be better. And, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, it's like, okay, you maybe don't really want to be better. And, you know, and I think that's really one of the things I look back and say, you know, there's a bunch of people that through the program, through the years, that really may not have had the program's best interest at hand, and giving them the opportunity to stay involved with the program might have been a little more detrimental than you know, recognized. But at the same time, there are a lot of guys that some people said that this person has no business being a part of a Division I wrestling team. And now they're very successful in their life because, you know, I was like, hey, I think this person has value and maybe doesn't win all the matches that, you know, we want him to win, but he's a successful person in life. And that's what the ultimate goal of college athletics is, to help these young people develop into positive members of society. You can go out and win a million wrestling matches and just not be a good person. You know, you can win a lot of matches and be a good person. You can not win a lot of matches and be a good person. You can not win a lot of matches and be a bad person. So it's ultimately what you're trying to do and for the next generation. And I think that was always my foundation, that if I had an opportunity to help someone be a better member of society and help their life, you know, that was just as important to me as having somebody that's going to go and, you know, win a national championship or become an All-American. Because when it's all said and done, you know, being a national champion, being an All-American, that's great. You know, a lot of people have had the opportunity. You get your name on a plaque, you get your name on the wall. But it's really the type of person, type of character you bring into the world that makes a big difference. And that's what I believe. And that's what my foundation was always in coaching, is to serve people and to help reach their full potential. And, you know, I would 100 times out of 100 times, if I had a decision to make that was going to help this person be more successful in their life as a whole, or if this decision might hinder someone's personal life, but it might help them win a match or two, 100% time, I'm going to help make the decision that's going to help them be a better person and it's going to help our society as a whole.
Kerry, let's end it with this. We like to play games. I'm going to give you a game called the name game. I'm going to give you 5 names of people. And what I want you to do, when I give you this name, I just want you to tell me what you think about that person. Are you ready to play the name game?
The name game. Is it one word answers, or is it?
We prefer not. You could, but we'd prefer a little bit of depth. Just maybe explain what you think about this person. We'll start out with Kerry Kolot.
Kerry Kolot, monster, one of the best wrestlers ever. He, when I was a freshman, he was a freshman at Penn State. I would try to be a part of, I can't even say participate, but try to be a part of some of the training that he did. And I was just, no, there's no way. I can't even imagine it. So he was just a monster. He was a guy that was just amazing to be around and to see his level of talent, technique at the age that he was at that level. It was pretty impressive.
Name number 2, Kevin Jackson.
Kevin Jackson, man, it's friend, champion, monster, awesome guy. You know, he was, so I've had the good fortune of being able to train and compete with him, and then to be coached by him, and then to coach with him. And every level, he has just been amazing. You know, definitely in a lot of his circumstances, he kind of caught a bad rap. I don't think he was appreciated as much as he should be. And, but he's doing great things. He's a great man, great husband, great father, and a great coach. And, I'm really fortunate and blessed to have him in my life.
Name number three, one of your former athletes, I think a three-time All-American, Hudson Taylor.
Hudson Taylor, yeah. So Hudson is very unique. You know, he brings a different perspective to everything that he touches. I would say an easy way to describe him is someone that gets the most that he can out of everything that he does, whether it be good or bad. You know, in a situation, there's stories about him, his freshman year in college, how he wasn't as focused as he could have been. And he kind of went off the deep end, you know, with his wrestling, with his diet, with his school. And, you know, it's like, hey, when he goes, he goes. But then he was able to pull it back in, you know, a lot from what I hear is from his wife now really set him straight. But, you know, he fully enjoyed life to its fullest. And, you know, sometimes as a coach, I wish he would have been a little bit more focused on wrestling than he was on other things, but that's not the way he is. So, yeah, very, very fortunate to have spent some time with him.
Name number four, UFC champion, two-time Olympian, world bronze medalist, Daniel Cormier.
DC, man, he's one of the funniest people I know, one of the toughest competitors I know, one of the most compassionate people I know. Emotions for him, I mean, he wears his emotional sleeve, whether it's good or bad. You don't want to make him mad, because you could be his best friend and he'll try and knock your head off. But he's such an awesome guy. I love what he's doing up there at Gilroy, but just being a family man now that, you know, he's got his two kids and his son's wrestling, and just, it's just awesome to be, to still understand that, you know, how far he's gone, he still keeps connections with the people that, you know, his one cousin is everywhere with him. And that's the guy that's been with him for his whole life. And you think it's real easy for people when they get to that certain level that he can leave him behind. But he's loyal, and he's just an awesome guy. And I'm really excited for his next few steps.
We'll end with your fellow 2003 World Silver medalist, Cale Sanderson.
Cale Sanderson, you know, he's one of the best to ever do it. As an athlete, as a coach, you know, the thing for him is he wants to get the best out of everything, everyone, every person around him. You know, a lot of people look and see, well, what's the secret? And it's about work ethic. It's about commitment. It's about service, about gratitude. And, you know, he brings that to everything he does. You know, obviously as an alum, it's awesome what's going on at Penn State. You know, when I was competing against him, not so much fun. But, yeah. So as an athlete, I remember, you know, in 03 and 04, we had some pretty tight-knit groups, you know, with Guerrero and Jamil Kelly and Daniel being all Oklahoma State guys and, you know, other guys that had been around. And he was a little bit younger, but he was involved. He was engaged. He would come and hang out with us. He'd play video games with us and, you know, play poker and all those different things. So, you know, he wasn't the type of guy that would just, he'd be detached. He was in, and, you know, maybe not as vocal and as active as some people, but he was definitely in and involved. And you know, he made everyone around him better just by that example. So he's an awesome guy, and I'm excited for what he's doing for our alma mater. And, you know, we'll see what the future holds for him.
Kerry, we appreciate this interview. How about this? How about at the next Beat the Streets, you have a little cello solo to kick things off?
That would be fun. That would be fun. You know, one of the ultimate goals that I had in college, I should say a goal, one of the things I brought up was my senior year, I was going to play the national anthem on the cello for senior day. And we were working on it, but it was one of those things where, you know, it before the time of really promotion and pageantry in college wrestling, you know, the coaches are like, yeah, that might just be a little bit too much of a distraction. Let's just focus on going out there and wrestling. So maybe I'll bring it back and do it for one of those events.
That'd be a blast. We've had a blast with you. Thanks for sharing your story. And we wish you all the best in the next phase of your life. We can't wait to see what it is.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everything you guys do. I'm excited for the new chapter you guys are engaging in right now. And, you know, like I said, I'll always be involved in wrestling. And as long as I'm involved in wrestling, well, even if I'm not involved in wrestling, I hope that we can continue to be friends and keep in touch and continue to follow what awesome stuff you guys are doing.
Hey, and believe me, we notice this every time we tweet something. You're always liking it, so we appreciate that, man.
Good stuff. Yeah. You know, when you got to do good stuff, you got to recognize it.
Yep. We appreciate it, man. Thanks for staying engaged and thanks for being on our show.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Great interview with Kerry McCoy. I don't know how much you knew about his story going in, but certainly there's a lot of things that I didn't know coming out of that interview. And Kerry's one of those guys that he says he's going to be in the sport, and that makes me happy because we need him in the sport. He's what you want. He's a great representation of what this sport means and what it brings to other people.
One of the friendliest guys in the sport, right? I mean,
yeah,
always got a smile on his face, always happy to see you, always happy to see him.
Yeah.
Just a really likable guy.
And that's how this came about. It was, we saw him at the World Team Trials and he just started chatting it up. And it's like, man, this guy, he has a lot to say and he says it in such an articulate way. And let's talk to Kerry. So I think there's going to be a great opportunity for him. I don't know what it's going to be, but we have to find a way to keep him in the sport. And believe me, wrestling's connected. Someone's going to pick up on Kerry's story and find a way to get him involved in some way. And I'm super excited to see what that's going to be. Great era of heavyweights too, man. We go back to that. Tommy Thompson, Stephen Neal, Steve Mako was in that era as well. Just tons of guys. And to come out of that era and to know that you were the guy for five consecutive years there from 2000 to 2004, that's a pretty big deal. Tough guys to beat.
Yeah. And then the picture he talked about, I was out there at Camp Pendleton the day they took it.
And
then also, yeah, and then also up at the gala where Bruce was there as well. And you start thinking about the historical sense of that. And he laid it out pretty well. Going back to what you say, like 1979?
Yeah, it would have been with Baumgartner having all that run. I mean, nobody was there other than Baumgartner for, what, 15, 16 years there? It was it's pretty remarkable when you
so
think about
in a 40-year stretch. I mean, what was he talking? Mako was not in the photo. Tommy Rollins was not in the photo. Tolly was not in the photo. But
yeah, Tom Erickson, I don't know if he was there. Okay. He would have been 97.
Okay, but pretty much everybody that over the course of the vast majority of the United States heavyweight representation for 4 decades. All in the same spot. That was pretty cool.
And going back, even just thinking about, we've talked so much about the rules, just thinking about that 2003 finals. It's just too bad that they didn't have the rules in place now back then, that you got to decide it with it was an actual body clinch at the time. That wasn't the leg clinch in 2003. That was the straight up body clinch. And you got to go to that to decide a match. I'm just glad that era is over. Not saying one way or the other who wins or who loses in that scenario, but I just think it really will give you the best guy possible with the current rules. And I think Kerry McCoy would do exceedingly well with these rules, especially with his ability to lace guys up and take guys down. I think he'd be really happy with the rules in place right now if he had them back then.
So are you saying you're a fan of criteria now, Kyle?
Well, I mean, criteria to a certain extent. The line still bothers me a little bit, but hey, okay. The rules are solid. The rules are really solid right now. And
it's good wrestling.
It is, man. And it's fast paced and you can understand it. The casual fan, it's going to take a little bit to guide the person through it. But overall, I think that there's a lot of equity and we're just not seeing the flare ups on the mat because the rules are there, and you know what? What's great about it is you get to see the instant replay on the board. Mm-hmm. There's no hidden agenda. There's no going behind the scenes, going to the closed doors. Let's decide a match and overturn it or have you re-wrestle. Those days hopefully are gone. There's still going to be a little bit of funny business probably here and there, but the major indiscretions, it seems like those are a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's pretty entertaining product right now. I think they've cleaned up a lot in 6 years, and I like where international wrestling is.
Let's keep it rolling that way. This has been fun to talk to Kerry McCoy. It's been fun to go to North Carolina. As always, for Andrew Timo Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.